Well, good evening, everyone. This is Kilo 6 Sierra United November, and this is SCARS, the South Coast Amateur Radio Service. This net is conducted under the guidelines of the SCARS organization and further follows the rules outlined in FCC Part 97 and Good Amateur Practice. This SCARS server is supplied by the Great Lakes Reflector System, provided by Kilo Bravo 8 Zulu Golf Lima. And all contacts and requests for information will be handled through the net control. When contact with another station is made, please move off the system and establish your contact direct so the net may continue. In fairness to all, short time stations will not be recognized as such. All stations will be worked in the order in which they've checked in. Information regarding our operation may be found on our website, www.scarsvoip.com. Actually, we have a lot of net controls this evening. I'm just merely opening it up this evening. My call is Kilo 6 Sierra United November. My name is Kathleen. I am located in the city of Port St. Lucie, Florida, where we currently have a temperature, last time I looked, of about 75 degrees, high of about 80 today. It was a very beautiful day, but when I left school, it was a little bit rainy. So prior to starting, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anything out of the ordinary that needs to be handled at this time. If so, I ask you to come aboard. All right, no emergency traffic, and as I always say, that's a great thing. But how about anyone celebrating a birthday, anniversary, something special this week or maybe this upcoming week or maybe even tonight that would like to come aboard? If so, merely come aboard. All right, hearing no birthday stations. And as I always say with that, we're not getting any older. All right, this is the monthly Thursday Informational Net Open Forum, or TIN for short. This net is conducted to provide information pursuant to amateur-related subjects and our other areas of general interest to those participating. All are encouraged to participate and ask questions of our guest speaker or speakers. I do want to advise everyone that this session tonight is being recorded for future presentation on our website. So if you've been part of this tonight, you will definitely be part of that recording. Before I turn it over to KY6V, I want to welcome Mr. Woody, KO4. UMQ, welcome to our net control staff. And I just have a question for you, but you can do this if you check in tonight, about your uniform. Different type of naval uniform, so I hope that you'll share that with us. So with that, Mr. KY6V, are you ready to take over?
I am. Thank you, Kathy. And good evening to one and all. KY6V here, and tonight our TIN program will be concentrating on sunspots, CME activity, and radio propagation. This subject is very broad and deep, so we'll be highlighting the main points as we work through the program. We intend to answer the following. What are these items? How do they work? How do they develop? And how dangerous or helpful can they be? So without further delay, allow me to start this evening's program by introducing our first narrator, and that's Dave, GW8SZL, over in the UK in Wales. And Dave, are you ready, sir, from KY6V? Over.
Yep, from Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima. Yep, I most certainly am there, Captain. I'm raring to go. And with that, I'll make a start. Good evening, everyone. I would like to start my section by trying to answer the question. What is a sunspot? Now, sunspots are caused by disturbances in the sun's magnetic field welling up to the photosphere, which is the sun's visible surface. The powerful magnetic fields in the vicinity of sunspots produce active regions on the sun, which in turn frequently spawn disturbances such as solar flares and coronal mass ejections, more commonly known as CMEs. Sunspots are dark, planet-sized regions that appear on the surface of the sun. Sunspots are dark because they are cooler than their surroundings. A large sunspot might have a central temperature of 4,000 degrees Kelvin, which is about 3,700 degrees Celsius, or 6,700 degrees Fahrenheit, much lower than the 5,800 degrees Kelvin, which is about 5,500 degrees Celsius, or 10,000 degrees Fahrenheit, temperature of the adjacent photosphere. Sunspots are only dark in contrast to the bright face of the sun. Now, if you could cut an average sunspot out of the sun and place it elsewhere in the night sky, it will be about as bright as a full moon. Sunspots have a lighter outer section, which is called the penumbra, and a darker central region named the umbra. Let me reset. Sunspots are caused by disturbances in the sun's magnetic field, welling up to the photosphere, which is the sun's visible surface. The powerful magnetic fields in the vicinity of sunspots produce active regions on the sun, which in turn frequently spawn disturbances such as solar flares and coronal mass ejections, CMEs. Now, because sunspots are associated with solar activity, space weather forecasters track these features in order to help predict outbursts of solar storms. Sunspots form over periods lasting from days to weeks and can persist for weeks or even months before dissipating. The average number of spots visible on the face of the sun is not constant, but varies in a multi-year cycle. Now, historical records of sunspot counts, which go back hundreds of years, verify that this sunspot cycle has an average period of roughly 11 years. Now, our sun isn't the only star with spots. In recent years, astronomers have been able to detect star spots, which are sunspots on other stars. Okay, do we have any questions, or would anybody like to check in? This is Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima. Okay, do anybody have any questions or would like to check in? This is Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu, Lima.
WA1EAW, Whiskey Alpha 1, Echo Alpha Whiskey. David, Aiken, South Carolina. Good evening to all.
Uniform Mike Quebec. That's Uniform Mike Quebec.
Okay, I've got two takers there. I've got David, Whiskey Alpha 1, Echo Alpha Whiskey. Welcome back. And Woody, Kilo Oscar 4, Uniform Mike Quebec. I'm just going to go to David. Have you got any questions or was you just wanted to check in there, my friend? From Golf Whiskey 8, Sierra Zulu Lima.
Man, I keep mixing up my HF pedal with my finger on the trigger for the Echolink, so I beg. I was even tuned into another net. So anyway, I just wanted to say hello, and it's nice day here in Aiken, South Carolina.
Yeah, okay there, David, from TW at Asset. I know that problem, but with a lot of rigs, they actually look the same and got very similar microphones. I sometimes pick up the wrong microphone and talk to somebody on 70 sems when I'm supposed to be talking them on 2 meters. And only realize it when they call me back and say, where have you gone? So I know that that problem intimately. Okay, thank you, David, there for checking in and saying hi. And with that, I'll go with the Woody, KO4UMQ. And welcome to the SCARS NCS staff as well there, Woody. Do you have any questions, or would you just like to check in there on the added to the list? KO4UMQ, GW at Acero.
Hey, good evening, Dave, everyone else on the net. I'm basically just checking in, and thanks for the welcome. And to answer Kathleen's question, I'm a member of the local honor guard. We perform military rites for veterans, and that's what that uniform is. And so far, so good. I'm enjoying this lecture tonight. I'm going to turn it back over to you, Dave. This is KO4UMQ. Back to you.
Yeah, KO4UMQ, GW, hey, that's set up. Okay there, Woody. And yeah, I was wondering about the uniform as well. But okay. With that, and there's no further check-ins or any questions then, I'm going to go and pass it over to my very good friend, W4RFJ. I'm not sure if he's up in Pennsylvania, but he's probably down in Dunellen, I would guess, in the warmth of Floridian weather. So, W4RFJ, Chief, take it away.
And GW8SZL from Whiskey 4 Romeo Fox Juliet. Thanks, Dave, and hello, everybody. This is W4RFJ with the South Cars Thursday Information Net. A corona mass ejection, or CME as we know it, is an explosive outburst of solar wind plasma from the sun. The blast of a CME typically carries roughly a billion tons of material outward from the sun at speeds on the order of hundreds of kilometers per second. A CME contains particle radiation, mostly protons and electrons, and also powerful magnetic fields. These blasts originate in magnetically disturbed regions of the corona, and the sun, which is the sun's upper atmosphere, hence the name, coronal mass ejection. Let me grab a nickel. Most CMEs form over magnetically active regions on the surface of the sun in the vicinity of sunspots. CMEs are often associated with solar flares, another type of explosive solar storm. However, CMEs and solar flares don't always go together. Scientists aren't really completely sure how the two phenomena are related, but CMEs are much more common during the solar max phase of the sunspot cycle when sunspots and magnetic disturbances on the sun are plentiful. CMEs travel outward through the solar system. Some are directed towards the Earth, though many others miss our planet completely. The radiation storms, which are a part of CMEs, can be hazardous to spacecraft and astronauts. If a strong CME collides with Earth's magnetosphere, the disturbance can trigger a series of events that sends a burst of particle radiation into Earth's upper atmosphere. As the radiation crashes into gas molecules on the Earth's atmosphere, it causes them to glow, creating the magnificent light shows of the auroras. That's the northern lights and the southern lights. Earth's magnetic field generates a sort of magnetic bubble in space around our planet. This region is called the magnetosphere. Earth's magnetosphere is a bit like a magnetic force field that surrounds our planet. The magnetosphere protects our planets from some types of radiation from the sun. Earth's weather is produced by heat, moisture, and wind, but space weather is a result of electromagnetic and particle radiation. The sun's magnetic field releases energy in its atmosphere, generating many forms of solar activity. Bursts of radiation and highly energized particles can race into interplanetary space. This solar wind flows around the Earth's magnetic field, the magnetosphere, drawing the field out into a comet-like tail. Okay, do we have any questions or any check-ins? This is W4RFJ with the South Cars Thursday Information Net.
KM6ZQB.
Okay, let's see. I saw George, KW4LCB, key up, but there's no audio, and we have Heather, KM6ZQB. If there's any others to join this group of check-ins for questions or just to say hi. Okay, hearing none. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo, you want to try that again, George?
Yeah, hello. Good evening to you, Roger, and mercy me, thank you, Dave, for you. What you had to say there. Yeah, you know, Chief, sitting back here, thinking about, some of the stuff you said there. Can you just imagine if, that the old sun up there kind of I really got churning inside there, and you know, shot him some gas off there, and kind of bypassed, I mean, his surface, and just hit the atmosphere, you know, like you said, the surface of the sun with a little first squirt come out there. It's about 6,000 degrees or so. But and you'd have that big a ball of flames coming through our system of things, man. That can do some wicked damage. KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo.
KW4 Lima, Charlie Bravo, Mr. Oh No. Hey, George, you're right, man. If we didn't have the iron core and the rotation and the magnetic field, you know, yeah, it would definitely be very destructive. Okay, George, well, it's great to hear your voice. Thanks for joining us this evening. And let's see, I'm getting a bunch of text up there. I see a hello. I see, okay, well, anyway. Yeah, not much else, but continuing on with this information, George. But, hey, hang tight after the net. I'd like to chit-chat with you for a minute, if you don't mind, okay?
Yeah, Roger. Got to hear the rest of this story. KW4, Lima, Charlie Bravo.
Okay, George, sounding great. Okay, next up on the list, Kilo Mike 6, Zira, Quebec Bravo. Good evening and welcome to the South Cars Thursday Information Net. I see your name up on the marquee is Heather. My name is Roger, South Cars number 6297. And I tried to look you up on the roster. I don't see that you're a member. Would you like to join? Go ahead, Heather. Jump in and say what you got to say. Any questions? Over.
Hi, this is Heather, KM6. Zulu, Quebec Bravo, and I'm in San Diego, California, and I'm a GLARG volunteer examiner with KB9EWG David, and we were chatting before your net, and the topic seemed very interesting to me, so he gave me the Echolink node number. And I just thought I would kind of drop in and just kind of, you know, listen a while. Anyway, it sounds like it's going great to me, and I just wanted to say hi to everybody. I don't need to be a member. I don't know when I'll be back, but I'm enjoying it so far. KM6, ZQB, back to you.
Okay, Heather. Well, let me tell you something, man. Being a member of South Cars is follows my motto of free or cheaper, and it's a lifelong membership. So if you decide you want to join our group just to get the number, that's okay too, and we'll just hope that you find it in your busy schedule of testing to come back and join us again. Well, thank you, Heather. Anything else you want to share, or did you have any questions on the material we've covered so far?
Thank you for asking, and I'm good so far. Like I said, I was just gonna try to listen in here, and it's a great topic, and I was very interested in it. And otherwise, I wouldn't have spent the time to join you this evening. Anyway, back to you.
Okay, Heather. Well, thanks for joining us. And just so you know, Saturday mornings, which is probably too early for you, I think it's like 5 o'clock in the morning for you, but at 8 a.m. Eastern Time, we have the South Cars Saturday a.m. connection, and we've got another net at noon, which would probably be, see, 11, 10, probably about 9 a.m. your time on the same conference for, we call it the South Cars Saturday Intercontinental Net. So please check out our website, scarsvoip.com, and that'll give you all kinds of information. All right. Did we have anybody else that wanted to check in and or have a question? Please come now, and either that or I'll just continue on with my portion of the net. W4RFJ.
Victor Echo 3 Alpha X-ray was checking in. Over.
VK2DY.
All right, I got you, Robert. This first station, I didn't quite get your call. You were a little broken.
Victor Echo 3 Alpha X-ray Whiskey. Over.
Okay, Victor Alpha 3. Papa. Did I write that right? Was it Papa X-ray wrong? No, Alpha, VE3, Alpha X-ray Whiskey. Sorry, I can't even read my own writing. This is W4RFJ. We've got VK2DY hanging on the tail gunner there. Go ahead, Alpha X-ray Whiskey. I think you said you're checking in, but I'll ask if there's any questions and give you a chance to say hello. This is W4RFJ. My name is Roger. My friends call me Chief, and this is the South Cars Thursday Information Net. Go ahead, sir.
This is Victor Echo 3 Alpha X-ray Whiskey. Yes, I'm checking in. I'm in Toronto. I'm just getting better over a 5-day flu that I've had. Thankfully, it wasn't COVID. And I'm just listening in to the interesting subjects you're bringing up. Over.
VE3AXW, this is W4RFJ. Well, thank you, and glad you could join us. Did you give me your name? I'd like to get it in my log. Over. Okay, I'm not hearing anything, so I'll go ahead and pass it over to Robert. Hey, Robert, how's it going down there in the land down under? VK2DY, come on in. You got a question or just want to say hi?
W4RFJ, VK2DY, Robert in Killyville Ridge, New South Wales, but all part of the urban sprawl that is Sydney. Well, no, I just wanted to say good morning and thank you for the net. Just listening to the information, just sitting here listening, if I check in and say good day. 17.2 degrees Celsius and overcast. That's 63 Fahrenheit. We'll get a few degrees warmer than that, but I think autumn is finally here. We've got rain predicted for the next week or two, so looks like we're going back to the cool, wet autumn again. And they're predicting snow down in Tassie, but of course nothing this far north, but they're definitely predicting snow down in Tassie. Thank you so much for running the net and for the information, and I'm just going to sit back and listen. But thank you again, VK2DY, back to net.
Okay, Robert. Fine business. Well, it's always a pleasure to hear your melodious voice, and it's nice to have you in there. All right, well, let's break with the check-ins, and let's move on. So we were talking about the Earth's magnetic field, the magnetosphere. The magnetosphere can be visualized as magnetic field lines produced by a giant bar magnet tilted about 11 degrees from the Earth's rotational axis. One magnetic pole is located in northern Canada and the other pole is located in Antarctica. The magnetic field above the poles extends far into space and shields the Earth from many of the energetic charged particles coming from the Sun and more distant sources in the galaxy. When the solar wind reaches Earth's upper atmosphere, it can energize charged particles. The result is colorful auroralis, or auroras, that encircle the magnetic poles at heights of around 60 to 125 miles, 100 to 200 kilometers for the metric types. In the atmosphere, and that's in the atmosphere, okay. In the northern hemisphere, there are also called the northern lights. Collisions of electrons with oxygen produce red and green aurora, while collisions with nitrogen produce red, blue, and violet aurora. Severe space weather can injure astronauts and satellites in orbit, disrupt radio, GPS, and airline communication systems, and also damage power grids on Earth's surface. Longer-term variations in solar magnetic activity can affect Earth's climate and space environment. Continued observations of solar activity help society anticipate and prepare for solar storms, so we can learn to live with our changing sun. Solar flares are huge explosions on the sun. A flare appears as a sudden, intense brightening of a region on the sun, typically lasting several minutes. Flares occur when intense magnetic fields on the sun become too tangled, like a rubber band that snaps when it is twisted too far. The tangled magnetic fields release energy when they snap. Solar flares emit huge bursts of electromagnetic radiation, including X-rays, ultraviolet radiation, visible light, and radio waves. The energy emitted by the solar... Okay, that ought to be enough. Although solar flares can be visible in white light, they are often more readily noticed via the bright X-ray and ultraviolet emissions. Coronal mass ejections often accompany solar flares, though scientists are still trying to determine exactly how the two phenomena are related. Solar flares burst forth from the intense magnetic fields in the vicinity of active regions on the sun. Solar flares are most common during times of peak solar activity, the solar max years of the sunspot cycle. Okay, do we have any questions, any concerns, changes, deletions, modifications, and or if you just want to check in and say hi, this is W4RFJ. I'll take check-ins now, please. Wow, I must have scared everybody off. KY6V is... Has NO70 showed up yet?
Negative on that, sir. So I can pick it up at this point for George, or you can rattle a little more, whatever you want to do, sir.
Hey, why don't you go ahead and take it, shipmate? And if you need my help, just yell. This is W4RFJ. I'd like to introduce the captain, KY6V. He runs a tight ship, so listen close. W4RFJ, over to you, captain.
Okay. Thank you, Roger, and everybody else. Participation has been great. Gordon, KY6V. I'm going to pinch hit for George, NO70, this evening. He was scheduled for this portion of the program. He's got involved in some medical analysis that's going on. He's had some outpatient testing and so on and so forth, so he's got his hands full. So let me say where he was going to pick up, that the ionosphere is traditionally thought of as having a number of distinct layers of electronic waves or electromagnetic waves. And in this case, radio signals travel. They interact with objects and the media in which they travel. So, as they do this, the radio signals can be reflected, refracted, or diffracted. These interactions cause the radio signals to change direction and to reach areas which would not be possible if the radio signals traveled in a direct line. The sun has an enormous impact on HF radio propagation because it affects the ionosphere, which gives rise to most of the long-distance effects that enable long-distance radio communication on the HF bands. As a result, is greatly affected many forms of radio communication, from the typical two-wave radio communication systems that are used by many organizations, various forms of mobile radio communication using the HF bands, to radio broadcasting, point-to-point radio communication, and radio amateur transmissions. Hey, they're including us here, guys. Let me buy a nickel for a second. As a result a knowledge of how the conditions on the sound effect radio signal propagation is essential for radio planning and prediction of HF propagation conditions. I guess that just makes sense. Radio propagation prediction software also takes the state of the sun into consideration when it calculates its estimates of the propagation conditions. So for many years, it's been known that there are ionized layers in the upper reaches of the atmosphere that affect various forms of radio communication. This region is known as the ionosphere, although the existence of an ionized region was first proposed just after the turn of the century, separately by two scientists, and they were namely Kenley from the United States and Heaverside from the UK. And since then, far more has been learned about the layers, especially since the rockets have managed to pass through the ionosphere and collecting data. Something I've never thought about, the rockets going up through there with their data machines open for data. All right, let me buy a nickel here. This is KY6V for the South Stars TIN here for the month of April. In most regions of the atmosphere, it is found that gases are in stable molecular form. However, in certain areas of the atmosphere, some of those start to become ionized, splitting into free electrons and positive ions. Of these is the free electrons that affect the radio signals. Along the layer where these ions and electrons are found is still called the ionosphere. This generally starts to happen at an altitude of around 30 kilometers. What's that, roughly 15, 16 miles, I guess? Although at this height of level of ionization are very small, they do not have an effect on radio signals. However, as the altitude increases, this is interesting to know now, as the altitude increases, the number of ions raises. So while it is often convenient to think of ionosphere in this way, it is not strictly true. The whole of the ionosphere contains ions and free electrons, although there are numbers of peaks, and which may be considered as different layers. These layers are given the designation. Now listen up, you've heard this before. The designations are D, E, and F. And this can only be very approximate because the levels of ionization vary as a result of the number of factors. Let me buy another nickel here. This is KY6V for South Cars. Okay, the lowest of the layers is the D layer. I think most of us know that. And this is found at altitudes between 60 and 90 kilometers. It only exists during the daytime when it is in view of the sun. Above this is the E layer at around 110 kilometers. This exists during the day, and then at night when it is not in sunlight, it becomes very much weaker. Finally, there's the F layer. And this barrier varies considerably, normally existing as two layers during the day. These are designated F1 and F2. They are found at altitudes of around 300 to 400 kilometers in the summer. And during the winter, they may fall around to 200, 300 kilometers. At night, the two layers generally combine to form a single layer. That's interesting to know. And this is generally around the altitude of 250 to 300 kilometers. It should be remembered that these figures are only a rough guide because they change quite considerably according to the time of the year and the state of the sun. I'm going to buy this timer another nickel. George had a large part in this program. The ionization in the ionosphere is generated when radiation from the sun strikes the gas molecules in the upper atmosphere. The radiation is a sufficient intensity that it gives the electrons in some molecules sufficient energy to leave the molecule structure. And this leaves a free electron and the gas molecule having one electron too few becomes a positive ion. Seems to me I learned some of that stuff back in chemistry somewhere, sometime. Long time ago, I might have. At very high altitudes, the atmosphere is very thin. And as a result, the levels of ionization are very low. As the atmosphere becomes denser, so the levels of ionization start to rise. However, the ionization process uses the energy of the radiation, and after a certain distance, the energy of the radiation is such that it does not ionize as much gas molecules as before, and the level of the ionization begins to fall. It is also found for the higher levels, including the F and the E layers, most of the ionization results from ultraviolet light. The D layer, being at the lowest altitude, results mainly from X-rays that are able to penetrate further into the atmosphere. So it is also found that the free electrons and positive ions slowly recombine. In other words, the radiation is causing them to ionize, and then they slowly recombine afterwards. In chemistry, this state of affairs is called a dynamic equilibrium. It means that if the source of radiation is removed, then the level of ionization will fall. As a result, the D layer disappears after nightfall, and the I layer is greatly reduced in intensity. In a view of high-level ionization, in the F layers, and the fact that the air density is so much less, it takes longer for the recombination process to take place, and consequently, it remains overnight, although its level is reduced. This can be seen the way that the radio communication varies during the course of a day. Okay, do we have any questions so far? I want to say that we're throwing an awful lot of valuable information at you guys in sort of short order here. This program is being recorded. I should have, with a little luck, the tonight's program edited and posted as a podcast on our website probably no later than about noon tomorrow. So you have another reference that you can go back in if you want to refresh some of the things that were said or think about them a little bit further. So do we have any questions here before I turn it over to our narrator up there in Wisconsin, KY6V, over.
KY6V, W4RFJ, you timed out, shipmate.
I did. I was sitting here waiting for check-ins. What did I just lose it or something?
It said on the marquee that you timed out, and I wasn't paying close attention, so I know it was toward the end.
Well, I said enough. I'm not going to reiterate more of that and bore the poor people out there. But if I left you hanging on anything, now's the chance to ask a question. Do we have any questions out there before I pass it to Dave in Wisconsin? KY6V. Okay. Mr. Wisconsin. David, how are you, sir? You ready to go? KY6V, over.
Hi, Captain. Ready to rock and roll.
The floor is yours, sir. Thank you.
Well, thank you there, Captain. Good evening, everybody. KB9EWG, Echo 2289 is my South Car's number. And we'll continue on with looking at the effects of the ionosphere. I think I got to bring my audio up just a hair, looks like, according to my meter here. Anyways, there we go. The different layers of the ionosphere affect radio waves in slightly different ways. When signal enters the D layer, it sets free electrons vibrating. As they vibrate, they collide with nearby molecules, and after each collision, some energy is lost. As a result, radio signals entering the D layer are attenuated. It is found that the level of attenuation is inversely proportional to the square of the frequency. In other words, doubling the frequency reduces the attenuation by a factor of 4. It is found that low frequency radio signals are completely absorbed by it. This can be shown by the fact that radio stations on the medium wave broadcast band can only be heard over short distances during the day. Let me reset here. We've had enough purple crystals to go around. I don't need to pick up one. Okay, and then at night, the D layer disappears. They can be heard over much greater distances. The effect is slightly different for the higher layers. Being higher in altitude, the gas density is much less. As a result, the different effect predominates again. The electrons are set in motion, but as fewer collisions take place, they act on the signal. So to bend it away from the area of highest ionization. In other words, the signals are refracted back towards the Earth. It is also found that the effect decreases with frequency, and as a result, the signal will eventually pass through one layer and on to the next. Variations in the ionosphere. The effect of the ionosphere is greatly linked to the amount of radiation it receives. This varies over the period of a day. At night, when ionosphere receives no radiation from the sun, the level of ionization falls and the communications may not be possible over some paths, or different frequencies may have to be used. Let me say here. Other changes also affect the ionosphere in just the same way that winters are colder, because that part of the Earth receives less warmth from the sun, so the ionosphere receives less radiation and the levels of ionization in the ionosphere falls. Okay, going back to sunspots here. Changes of the sun itself also affect the ionosphere. One of the major changes occurs as a result of sunspots that appear on the surface of the sun. If the sun is viewed by projecting its image onto a screen, then the number of dark areas may be seen from time to time. These spots may last from anywhere between a few hours to days, or even weeks. The spots are areas where the surface of the sun is cooler than the surrounding areas. Resetting. So we've had plenty of purple crystals. I don't need to get one here today. So the temperature of the spots is only about 3,000 centigrade. This is quite cool when compared to the temperature of the rest of the surface. That is around 6,000. Well, actually, that would probably be Kelvin. I'm They're saying 6,000 C, so I'm thinking it's centigrade, yeah. However, it is very much hotter under the surface where temperatures reach in excess of a million degrees. The sunspots are areas of intense magnetic activity. The magnetic fields in these areas are enormous, and as a result of the surface of the sun is disrupted by cause of the surface temperatures to fall, these areas causing darker areas to be perceived. Around the sunspot itself, there is an area that is known as the Plage, P-L-A-G-E. This is slightly brighter than the surrounding area and is a large radiator of ultraviolet radiation and X-rays. The amount of radiation emanating from the Plage means that there is an overall increase in the level of radiation from the sun. In fact, it is noticed that the level of radiation from the sun can be estimated from a knowledge of the number of sunspots that appear on the surface. As sunspots often appear in groups, a method of trying to estimate their effect has been devised. A figure known as the sunspot number is used. This number does not represent the number of spots themselves, but the level of activity on the sun and the sunspot numbers is very closely related to the amount of radiation received by the sun. Resetting. The daily readings of the sunspot numbers fluctuate considerably. To overcome this, the readings are smoothed mathematically to take out the erratic natures of the readings and so that the underlying trend can be seen. This number, called the smooth sunspot number, or SSN, is often quoted in association with propagation reports. The sunspot cycle. The number of sunspots on the sun's surface varies. On some days, very few or even none may be seen, whereas at other times there may be very many. The daily number varies considerably over a short period of time as the sun rotates. But if the smooth sunspot number is used, it can be seen that there is a much longer term trend. The trend shown by the number of sunspot rises and falls over a period of approximately 11 years. This number is only an approximate guide because there is a considerable amount of variation on this. Records of the sunspot numbers have been kept since the mid-18th century. By referring to these records, it has been possible to track the cycles. Since then, cycle 22 started in September of 1986 with a number of 12. It rose rapidly over the next 33 months to reach a peak of 158. From then, it fell slightly and rose again to give a second smaller peak before ending in 1996. Now, a cycle 25 has started and the numbers are rising. The effects of the sunspot cycle. The increased numbers of sunspots means increased levels of radiation in turn. This means that there is a greater level of ionization in the atmosphere. Accordingly, this affects propagation on HF bands. It is found that the maximum frequencies can be reflected and are increased. Do we have any questions or check-ins? This is KB9EWG. Okay, no questions or check-ins. So continuing on. At the sunspot, minimum frequencies around 15 to 20 megahertz are normally supported during the day. However, at the maximum frequencies, in excess of 60 megahertz may be affected. This means that the popular ham bands like 24 and 28 megahertz may not support communications via normal ionosphere modes in the sunspot minima. Often 28 megahertz appears dead with no stations audible. However, during periods of around the maximum, it is an excellent band. Low power stations or those with poorer antennas find a particularly good as the delayer attenuation is much less. Even low power stations can make excellent contacts. The sunspot number can be used to give a very rough guide to what conditions may be like. The figure tends to vary from about 65 at the minimum of the cycle to over 300 at the maximum. For good conditions on the higher frequency bands, it is found that a figure of in excess of about 100 is required. Up-to-date figures can be accessed from a variety of websites, including http://www.sunspotcycle.com. It's Sierra Uniform November, Sierra Papa Oscar Tango, Charlie Yankee Charlie Lima Echo, sunspotcycle.com. A word of warning. Oh, Echo, stop. A word of warning, under no circumstances should the sun be viewed directly, even though dark glasses is in the past, many people have had their sight damage doing this. Stand by. All right, in summary, the sunspot activity of this great important is of great importance to anyone involved with HF radio communications, whether two-way radio communications, maritime mobile communications, general mobile communications, or point-to-point radio links, amateur radio communications, radio broadcasting, or whatever form of radio communications. The level of sunspot activity has an enormous effect on the ionosphere and hence HF radio propagation conditions. Accordingly, even a superficial understanding is advantageous. As a reminder, the QRZ home webpage has a current solar weather display and provides information on the page on how to read the data. Do we have any questions, comments, or check-ins at this time? This is KB9EWG.
Check-in from Alpha Echo 7 Mike Romeo. Seven, Mike Romeo.
And six, Victor.
Well, Terry, Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo, nice to hear from you this evening. And I'm acknowledging six, Victor, as well. Terry, any comments for you this evening there, sir?
Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo. You know, it's always wonderful to hear stuff like this. My first time of hearing something that... With ham radio as a general, I got a hold of the November 8 extra horsepower David in Detroit, who taught me my QRP, bless his heart. And so when I get a chance to hear stuff like that, like this today that I haven't heard before, it's really nice to listen. And David is a professor of propagation, and by golly, I tell you, you get fed well when you meet up with him on the air. Alpha Echo 7, Mike Romeo.
Well, excellent, Terry. Well, it's good to hear from you this evening. And, it can definitely be useful to know that information about, you know, the solar reports and all that there and, you know, knowing what the conditions are, especially if you are involved with communication. So thank you so much for your check-in and your comments. Over to the captain. What say you, sir?
Well, first, thanks, David. Hi, everybody again. KY6V here, South Florida. I just wanted to mention for those that are very active down on the HF band that things have really started to improve the last couple of days. You know, there's a rule of thumb that I use. There's two particular ingredients to what's going on in the sun that I try to watch. One is this the sun flux index, and the other is the K factor. Now, rule of thumb has taught me that if the sun flux figure is 150 or higher, things are starting to get pretty good. And at the same time, if the K factor is down very low, in let's say ones or twos, things are really whistling Dixie. So I wanted to say that yesterday we hit 160 on the solar flux with a K factor of 1. And today we're at 164 with a K factor of 2. Any of you guys are running 10 meters, I'll bet you it's been open. KY6V, go ahead, David.
Oh, that's very interesting, Gordon. Thank you. You know, I'm looking over the script and everything else there, and I do see one source that probably could have been mentioned that was missed here. So I'm just going to make a quick mention of this. Another excellent source of the keeping track of the weather and everything else, is as far as solar weather goes, is Tamitha Scove, the space weather woman there. And, of course, her website is thespaceweatherwoman.com. She makes appearances on Ham Nation, and she's got some excellent videos out there talking about the propagation, and it seems like that woman never sleeps with all her weather information going out there. KY6B, anything else for you there, sir, from KB9EWG?
No, that's it, but thanks again, David, KY6B.
Okay, well, that brings us to the end of this script here, so does anybody have any other check-ins, comments, questions or anything else that they wish to pop up here before we wrap up the next year? This is KP9EWG, one of the net controls for this evening. All right, well, with that, then I'm going to wrap things up, and I'm going to get ready to go assist Heather with her testing session this evening. So I'm going to say this has been SCARS, VOIP. Net schedules and general information may be found on our website, scarsvoip.com. That is scarsvoip.com. Go there and check out all the wonderful information on there. And, of course, this evening's podcast will be up here within the next day or so, recording for this evening, along with all our other wonderful podcasts there. So I'm going to say 7-3, everybody. This has been KB9EWG, along with the cast of others, saying thank you for your participation this evening. And I'm going to secure the net and turn the server back to normal amateur use. This is KB9EWG. We are clear.